Welcome back to Season 3 of Be the Adult Podcast. Thanks so much for joining our journey of learning how to parent as the best adults we can be. Wow, today's episode speaks directly to our name, Be the Adult for Your Child. I sat down with the incredibly accomplished and authentically aware Marianne Williamson. I imagine you'll be as awakened as I was hearing her discuss her passion and tireless dedication of how to best support all children by addressing what she names the American crisis of adulthood. Marianne Williamson is a best-selling author, political activist, and spiritual thought leader. For over three decades, Marianne has been a leader in spiritual and religiously progressive circles. She is the author of 14 books, four of which have been number one New York Times bestsellers. A quote from the mega bestseller, A Return to Love. Quote, our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. End quote. Is considered an anthem for a contemporary generation of seekers. Williamson founded Project Angel Food, a nonprofit that has delivered more than 14 million meals to ill and dying homebound patients since 1989. The group was created to help people suffering from the ravages of HIV/AIDS. She has also worked throughout her career on poverty, anti-hunger, and racial reconciliation issues. In 2004, she co-founded the Peace Alliance and supports the creation of a U.S. Department of Peace. She ran for the Democratic nomination for president in 2020, and in 2021, she launched mariannewilliamson.substack.com. Enjoy my conversation with Marianne, and please help us continue to make this content available to all interested parents by remembering to subscribe, like, rate and review our nonprofits podcast. Thanks so much.
Welcome to the Be the Adult podcast. Be the Adult is a nonprofit organization that provides blueprints for calm and effective parenting so that children can grow into their best selves. Because ultimately, we aren't raising children. We are raising little people who will one day be adults.
So welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. I feel my heart beating out of my chest. I'm so excited to be sitting with you.
Well, I'm happy to speak to you as well. I think what you're doing is very important. And the conversation around parents and how we raise our children is, you know, this is ground zero of where things can go wrong and also ground zero where they need to be repaired. So I'm happy to be here with you.
Thank you. I really appreciate your tireless efforts to create authentic healing and change for us and for children now and for future generations of children. So that is near and dear to my heart. It is my mission in life to change this world one parent at a time. So,
well, the idea of taking care of our children should be everyone's mission, whether people have children or not. The idea of tending to the needs of future generations. I don't think there's ever been a generation of Americans so collectively neglectful of the needs of future generations. So let's get down to it.
Yeah, that's a powerful statement. Yeah. So I'm curious, being the adult means so many different things to whomever we ask. I'm curious what your definition of that would be. And I know that's a big question. And then also, I hear often you talk about the crisis of adulthood. And I'm curious if you could maybe tie that in and expand our knowledge on that.
I have felt for a while that our generation of Americans has had a prolonged post-adolescence. You know, I come from a culture where there is a traditional coming-of-age ceremony, which you see in something like the bar mitzvah, the bat mitzvah, the coming-of-age ceremonies in indigenous tribes, et cetera. And one of the things I've known about my own tradition, the Jewish religion, is that because of thousands of years of persecution, the patterns of this, the only way the tribe, which in this point meant the Jewish people, would survive is if somebody became an adult around here. And we have, when I say we have a crisis of adulthood, what I mean to say is that we're living at a time of serious challenges, and we're not always centered within ourselves in a place capable of addressing serious challenges, because we have been acculturated into an infantile way of being. Mm. You know, consumerism infantilizes us because, among other things, it convinces us constantly that we're not enough the way we are. Adults know I'm in charge here. I got what it takes. I've got what it takes. So if you're constantly told that on some level you don't have what it takes and you need something outside yourself to have what it takes, as opposed to the real qualities of personhood that are maturity, right, sobriety, responsibility, integrity, these are the kinds of things that are given short shrift in America today. You know, I have noticed, spending quite a bit of time in Europe, that the basic tenor of conversation at most European dinner tables is more intelligent, intellectual, and sophisticated than ours. Not because Europeans are more intelligent than us.
Right.
Not because they're more, they have something we don't have, but because their culture, everything from their news media to their social media, to just their traditions, is we're the adults at the table. We're going to have a serious adult conversation. Mm. There is almost a cultural mitigation against that in too many situations in America, where you, somebody introduces a more serious topic and you're likely to be met with something like, oh, we're not going to have to go there, are we? What, we're all supposed to just spend the whole evening talking about silly things. Now, you and I can laugh about this, but children are watching.
Absolutely.
And children, this I believe as a mother, children learn, and I know not only as a mother, but as having been the child, mm-hmm. I learned most from my parents by watching how they did it.
Absolutely. Right.
And if you're acting like a child, how are your children ever going to learn to be adults? If you don't teach your children, well, no, that wouldn't be honest. Yes, this is what integrity is. This is what the golden rule is. This right. is how you treat people. This is why we must care for the poor. This is what why we must care for the earth. Where do you expect kids to learn values? We have loaded onto schools responsibilities that schools alone should not have to carry.
Mm-hmm.
And too many Americans do not think about how it's my responsibility to teach my child to be a good person.
Absolutely. And
to even behave with manners, by the way.
Yes, to teach them, so verbally, and then actually the most important part is to follow through and model that for our children, right?
I think they're equally important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. The modeling, the demonstration. Children learn from what they see you do and how they see you behave. I think maturity involves conscious lifestyle decisions. Society can't make you do anything that you don't choose to do, although in some economic ways, it makes it very, very hard to rise above, for many people, to rise above the shackles of the chronic economic tension and anxiety that leaves them little bandwidth, time, and energy to attend to their children as they might like. But for many of us, we can't use that as an excuse. I think number one, in my opinion, should be, would you turn the television off during dinner, please? Would you tell your kids that they're not going to have their tablets on during dinner? It's unbelievable to me. The lack of connectivity, which used to be centered just like in society around the town hall, around the town square, in the family, used to be centered around the dinner table.
Right.
When my daughter was growing up, this whole thing of Facebook and all of that only began when she was already a late teenager. When she was a little girl, I didn't have to worry about it. But I'm telling you something, if I had a child today, no, you're not going to have your computer on it at dinner. And we all have to face the fact we are addicted. We are addicted at this point. And I think we need to kind of face that. You all have a dinner table. Somebody, makes a beautiful dinner and everybody's scrolling through. And we're teaching little children. You know, you talk about modeling for children. I was in a restaurant in Houston years ago. And there were about five adults at the table. And there was a child, a little one in a high chair, who was sitting there with this tiny little baby screen. So at the age where her little brain should have been getting social cues mm-hmm. and clues and learning,
right,
she was already being focused on a screen And what she was being taught was that people are peripheral. Mm-hmm. Life is on the screen. That's what a whole generation has been brought up with. Life is on the screen. Mm-hmm. My ability to connect, which I yearn to do, is on the screen. You see young people having dates, sitting and waiting for the movie to start. This was pre-COVID. I would notice they're sitting there. They're not talking to each other.
Yes.
And then everybody's wondering why the young people aren't having sex like they used to. Right. It's unbelievable. You know where I also see it? It drives me insane. I used to travel on airplanes a lot. Pre-COVID. And I learned so much and met so many interesting people. Now people sit down, they immediately put their earbuds in. And the next thing they do now, which is even more natural, they close everybody closes the blinds immediately. That beautiful sky out there, those beautiful clouds out there.
Right.
Everybody's like, no, I don't want the world. I'm going to shut out the world. I'm going to shut out the person next to me. And I'm just going to only look at this great B movie.
Right. And so we're going.
And children are being brought up in this.
Yeah. Yeah. And
to bring up automatons.
I hear so many parents complaining about the amount of time their children spend on screens. And then when you encourage them to start being curious about their own use of screens, the light bulbs start going off. Right.
Well, also, I always say to people, get to this stuff before the eye rolling years. Right. This should start early. I mean, if you're going to give these little children when they're like 2 years old, mm-hmm. and I understand there's some very cool educational things on there too. I mean, I'm not saying that there aren't, but parents, for God's sake, people under parent. You know, we talk a lot about the helicopter parents who hover too much, but I think the larger problem we have is under parenting. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really what just putting the screen in their hands. You know, like people used to say, I use the TV as a babysitter. Now, oh, I don't have to parent. I mean, the screen will do that. They'll learn about reading on looking on the screen.
Right.
And then for a lot of parents, that means, and I can look on mine. So I think that it's kind of what you were saying before. We have to address these issues societally and personally.
Right. Right.
Sometimes I think about people, why do you even have a child? If you weren't planning on spending any time on it.
So the underparenting, is it, are you talking about more of a disconnection?
Well, if your child's on the screen all the time, you know, when are you going to talk to the child? And by the way, I know how overwhelming motherhood is.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've been there and I'm not saying, you know, and I do. And I also understand that some of my passion about this comes from things I did wrong. Mm-hmm. I remember when my child, she was still crawling and we still had the kinds of phones that you have that little thing you push down, and she crawled across the bed while I was talking and she hung it up.
Oh, wow.
And she used to say to talk to me, mommy.
Mm-hmm.
And then she used to always say to me, be with me, mommy, be with me, mommy. Be with me, mommy. And she would be. And I was one of those moms who thought, well, she's in the room with me, so I'm with her.
Right.
But I wasn't really with her. I was on the phone or I was on my computer. I was working. And I heard her say once to someone who was a babysitter, I heard her say, I miss my mommy even when she's here.
Wow.
So I got a real slap in the face from the universe about this stuff.
How aware that she was too. That's impressive to be able to feel confident to communicate that too.
I remember when I was visiting once with some family members, and they had a little girl who at that time was about two, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And I came in the room and her father said, let's say her name was Alicia. Her name isn't Alicia. Alicia, do you want to say hi to Aunt Marianne? And she went, no. He said, and this is what he said to a two-year-old. Well, don't you think it would be not the nice thing to do? No. Well, I think that would make Aunt Marianne feel good. No. And I thought to myself, who are you raising?
Mm-hmm.
And then when I had a child, I mean, this is, she has to be taught. Mm-hmm. Aunt Marianne walked in the room. She's older. She's a family member. Get up and say hello. Who's going to teach her? Why are you expecting her to know this? I remember once when my daughter was about, five. So somebody walks in the room, Mrs. Smith, and I said, India, say hello to Mrs. Smith. And Mrs. Smith said, oh, she doesn't have to. And I said, oh, yes, she does.
Wow.
And I was at an event, a conference with several of my colleagues. I remember James Redfield, Wayne Dyer, Deepak Chopra, a bunch of them were standing around talking. We were like in a circle. And my daughter ran in and she said, mommy, mommy, mommy. I said, wait, stop right there. Mm-hmm. What do you say? And she got quiet and she went, acknowledge the humanity of the people who are standing here.
Oh, I love it.
Yes. She said, hi. I said, and they were all just amazed. I said, thank you very much, honey. And then she went, okay, mommy, blah, blah, blah.
I love it.
No, you can't just run it. There are people here.
Yes.
And the thing is, these people who are not teaching their children manners mm-hmm. are, then they're saying, are you going to get into this university or that university? But if they don't learn manners and they don't learn how to talk to people, people aren't going to like them. People aren't going to want to employ them. People aren't going to be patient with them. Yes. These are not just survival skills. They are success skills. Learning to be polite, learning to say please and thank you. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing the consequences of this, just like we're seeing the consequences of a generation that was raised to think you get the prize just because you ran the race.
Right. I hear your passion and I appreciate your energy. And I keep nodding my head. This all resonates with me. So how do you think we can, often I work with parents and they know at some level cognitively what they, you know, air quotes, should be doing, what would be a better way of interacting. But yet in the moment, it's hard when we're bringing all of those stresses with us to the moment and our own history, our own trauma and all of that. Any suggestions you might have of how parents can increase their awareness in that moment to be more present, to make that more authentic connection, to teach these things that are so important?
Well, this isn't just about parenting. This is about life.
Yeah.
Whether it's mindfulness, prayer, meditation, mm-hmm. some centering and reflection, particularly in the morning. Mm-hmm. Sometimes parents would say to me, well, I don't have time to do that because I have to take the kids or I have to get breakfast. I have to do this with the children. And I say, it's not too early to start that with the children. This is our time with God. Mm-hmm. So be really quiet. And kids go, it's time with God. And go, mm-hmm, God time. Mm-hmm. Children are very, I remember early in my career when people used to ask me, could I bring the little ones to the wedding or to the funeral? And what I noticed about little children brought to those things, I would see kids like at funerals who would they understand when you expose children mm-hmm. to religious practice and ceremony, they have a natural inborn sense of reverence if it is cultivated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not really saying, no, this is mommy's time with God. We spend time with God in the morning. And kids go, with God. Yeah. Yeah. We spend time with God.
Yeah. Mm.
You know, I mean, this business of saying to kids, say your prayers at night. What happened to that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the problem we have in this society is at what age are you supposed to stop saying your prayers at night? You know what I mean? It's like, at what point does God not care? I mean, you know. Yeah, but you have to cultivate in your own personal life and with your child. And enough with this, I'm at the effect of my childhood trauma. That is not an excuse. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Because every moment you have a chance, you know, we're all wounded. Okay. All wounded. But you have a choice in life whether or not to behave from the wound.
Absolutely.
And we owe it to our children.
Yes.
And that's part of what, yeah. I'm sorry.
We owe it to ourselves, right? And to our children. Yes.
Yeah. I wrote a book called Emma and Mommy Talk to God. Oh. And a lot of people have told me that their kids would say, mommy, would you, or daddy, would you read me that book again? Children love to hear about angels and God. They love that. We threw away the baby with the bathwater and a lot of things we've left behind in our society.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some old-fashioned things.
Yeah.
Like parents asking their kids at the dinner table, what'd you do in school today? What did you learn? What happened? What was your day today? If everybody's just on, at what point is a child supposed to hear from a parent, I care what you went through today?
Mm.
And how are they going to learn that that's what you're supposed to say to people that you love? I care what you went through today. How was your day?
What a beautiful way to say that. To show our children how much they matter to us, how curious we are about them. Would you mind telling me more about that book? It sounds wonderful.
It's called Emma and Mommy Talk to God, and it's about a little girl, and there's a mean boy named Peter, and he throws sand in her face, and she goes home and complains to Mommy, and Mommy says, well, Peter must be sad. Peter, maybe things weren't happy for Peter in his house, and so let's pray for Peter. And she prays for Peter every day, and then Peter becomes nice. I remember once when my daughter was little and she was sitting with some of her girlfriends, and they were in the breakfast room and I was in the kitchen, and they were talking about somebody they didn't like at school. They were around maybe 8 years old, 9 years old, whatever. I don't remember. And I remember saying, you know, he or she, I can't even remember who it was actually, things might not be happy at their house. You know, because one of the things that I realized was if I tried to teach my child spiritual wisdom within a context of a box labeled in her mind spiritual wisdom, she might not receive it so easily. So I tried to deliver it situationally. Like, you know, she might have, her mommy and daddy might be unhappy. They might be yelling. They might yell at her. You know, and I would talk about, do you think that might be true? Yeah, you know, and they would talk. And then I say, you know, why don't we say a prayer for her?
So you were instilling the empathy at a very young age.
Well, just, you know, even if people don't come in from come at it from a place of a religious or spiritual context, to say, you know, you can have more compassion, you can have more forgiveness. You don't know what's going on in her house. If we don't talk to our children about those things, where are they supposed to learn these values?
Yeah.
Where are people supposed to learn reverence and compassion and forgiveness and integrity and honesty and truth if we're not teaching them? And we ourselves are spending too little time thinking about those things, talking about those things.
So what do you think stops us from really sharing this?
Well, we've developed a culture over the last 50 years that has just peripheralized the things that matter most. We've made economics and business and, you know, making it, consumerism, what's important. Everything in the outer world, what's important. Then just allowing our musculature, our inner musculature of what it means to be good. We ask, how do you get rich? We should be asking, but how do you become good?
Yeah. Love that thought. It's really the noise takes over and we really lose the ability
to. That's exactly right. That's exactly the point. The noise takes over, the cacophony of the world, as opposed to the stillness of that sweet, still voice within us, which is why we meditate, why we, you know, we just keep on the TV too much. But now it's not the TV. It's the, this bit with the tablets is out of control. And I see it myself. It's addictive.
Absolutely.
It's addictive. And I think we need to face it as an addiction. And
yeah. And it's the way I hide from the vulnerability.
You and I talked at the beginning about the idea of a coming of age ceremony. I wrote a book called Illuminata, and I have in that book a coming of age ceremony. Obviously, people can make it whatever they want to, but there are some ideas there. In a society, you know, in if it was centuries ago, there was a phase of life they called master and maiden. Maidenhood. Maidenhood was she's no longer a child. She's in that adolescent period. Now, when society, through a coming-of-age ceremony of some kind, marks that new period, this is a healthy container for the transition. If the family, the community, the society do not mark it, the young person will subconsciously figure out a way to mark it for themselves. Body piercing, tattoos. In my generation, it was sex and drugs.
Interesting.
Right? You will market if no one helps you market. You know, when my daughter was bat mitzvah, the cantor at the end of the ceremony brought her to me and said, "You brought her here a child. I return her to you a woman."
Mm.
Because the whole point of the bat mitzvah is you will now be a man or woman in the eyes of God. And one of the things about my daughter's bat mitzvah that surprised me, took me by surprise, was not only the psychological effect that it had on her, but the psychological effect that it had on me.
Oh.
And I remember my daughter used to do that thing that kids do, right? She would come in the house every day after school, "I'm home," like it was the biggest news anybody would have heard all day. But she had been told that she could not answer the doorbell. You know, an adult has to answer the doorbell. Either mommy will come answer the doorbell, or if the housekeeper is here, the housekeeper. You can tell it's a doorbell, right? But you don't go answer the doorbell. You're just a kid who knows who's there. After her bat mitzvah, the doorbell rang, and my daughter said, "Mommy, there's someone at the door." And these words came out of my mouth, and it so surprised me. I said, "Answer it. You've been bat mitzvah." That I had turned a page.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
And that, you know, people don't, adolescents, we don't have this respect for the transition.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the gender, a lot of gender confusion there. I'm a student of Pat Allen. I don't know if you are, but I love how she talks about the need of the father to cherish the feelings at puberty, the need of the mother to of the girl, and the need of the mother to respect the thoughts of the boy at puberty. For us to really learn and tend to and honor these things as they're happening, as our kids enter puberty, is so important. I feel so sorry for teenagers today. We have these huge suicide rates. They are facing such a random and seemingly meaningless universe. And if they have not been prepared as children,
yes,
to find meaning where meaning lies, to stand on the ground that is solid, mm-hmm, in the midst of this chaos. Wow. So I think the point here is that we have a crisis. We have a crisis regarding our children, regarding our teenagers, regarding our connection between parent and child. And these things can only be healed one stitch at a time. Clearly, there are societal issues, social issues, political issues. The fact we do not have universal healthcare even regarding healthcare for our children. The fact that we do not have universal pre-K as they do in other advanced countries. The fact that we do not have universal paid leave, parental leave, as they do in other advanced countries. The fact that we do not have free college the way they do in other advanced countries. The fact that there is so much economic tension. And childcare, I should add to that. The fact that there is so much economic tension is certainly a factor in this breakdown in many parts of our population. But there are also plenty of people who have all the money that they need to provide for those things who are just as lax in their attention to parenting as is anyone else, and for whom an economic justification does not apply.
Right. Right. I'm curious if there's one thing that you would want parents to take away, maybe something that they could start doing to help.
Well, a couple things that were told to me when my daughter was little. Someone said to me, it was a young woman who was working for me. She was a mother herself, and she said something that was very meaningful. She said, "Say yes whenever you can."
Hmm.
Instead of saying, "No, honey, don't do that," say, "Honey, we do it this way." Now, I'm not saying no never has a place in parenting, but that she taught me to communicate as much as possible from a yes, "We do it this way, honey. This is the way we do it."
Mm.
That was very good advice. Mm-hmm. Another piece of good advice I got when my daughter was very little was how important it was to spend quality time that was just me and her alone. You know, daddy baby time or mommy baby time, no computers on. At that time, there were no cell phones.
Right.
You reading to the child, you playing down on the floor, etc. And the only last thing I would say that I'm sure you would agree with, it goes so much faster than you have any idea.
Oh, yes.
And at the time, it feels overwhelming. And if you listen, it is overwhelming. And if you have any intimacy issues, they're there. I'm not saying, you know, it's not overwhelming. but it goes so fast. And with relationships with your child, unlike relationships with an adult, you don't get years back. So you and I could have an argument and see each other again in 5 years and take up where we left off. But if I mess up with my child at five, at 10, I sort of wake up and remember, I kind of lost between 5 and 10. You know, and I also, the other thing is about every moment until the age of 5. You know, the Jesuits used to say, give me a child before he's 5 and he's mine. Every bit of information, data, stimulus that you put into the mind of your child before the age of 5 will remain there.
Yes.
You are their universe. Mm-hmm. After 5, once they start going to school, you're still the most important factor for a while, but you're not the only one.
Right.
So I regret every minute I spent away from my daughter before the age of 5.
Mm-hmm. Really gives all of us something very meaningful to think about. That connection is so important, especially during those early years. Yeah.
And that quality time where they're more than just sitting there.
Yes, absolutely. I can't thank you enough. And I very much.
Oh, thank you.
I appreciate
thank you both. Thank you for what you're doing. And thank you for talking to me.
Thank you. You too.